Good morning. I'm going to divert just a little bit from my prepared sermon to first of all ask for those who are able, if you have served in the military, may I ask you to please stand if you can. And I want to publicly and personally thank you for your service and what you have done for America. Thank you. Well, this is indeed a great morning, first of all, to see all of you here. Now, I don't know what Reverend Rue had given to you all to get you all out here or that day, but thank you so much for coming here. And this is indeed a very, very touching topic that I really would like to talk about. During the period of 2004 to 2011, I had a very interesting job. Where I was working as a government contractor, that I was principally responsible for directing the troop vocational rehabilitation program for transitioning service members that were leaving the military. Most of those service members were separating from the service due to severe injuries, such as a loss of limb, hearing, eyesight, burn injuries, as well as psychological disorders from traumatic stress in combat. It was both a very rewarding and necessary profession for me, given that I had served 30 years in the military myself, although not in combat situations, as well as an opportunity at the same time to put my faith into practical use. My military career in the U.S. Coast Guard, though interesting and at times having been placed in harm's way at a great number of times involved with sea rescues and maritime law enforcement boarding, it didn't compare to the uncertain dangers that our servicemen and women have faced engaged in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I do want to make this clear. Today's sermon is not about war, whether we should have been there or not, who's right or who's wrong, or any side of the view of the current political policies and the views of today's situation. Instead, I want to talk about the people. The men and women who have served are still serving in these hazardous conditions, the families they leave behind during their deployment, and those who have returned home, the challenges and perils they continue to face because of their service. Why talk about it today, here in church, and as a sermon topic? What does it have to do with our faith? And if this isn't anything that has to do with politically motivated discussion, what is the point of bringing this up anyway? To be quite honest with you, I had given this sermon a topic some thought when I started working at the Veterans Vocational Program. It occurred to me while following one of my daily rituals back then with reading the morning comic strip Doonesbury in the Washington Post about a cartoon character named BD, who was created by award-winning cartoonist Gary Trudeau. Trudeau's comic strip series on BD provided those of us who followed it as a vivid illustration during wartime. BD was an Army National Guardsman who lost his leg during the Battle of Fallujah in Iraq and suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, or commonly referred to as PTSD. While Trudeau's characterization was satirical, bordering on humor, nonetheless, he used his comic strip character, BD, to raise the visibility and awareness of just what happens physically and mentally to those who answered the call to duty and placed in harm's way. In 2006, I had the pleasure of meeting Gary Trudeau and orchestrating an opportunity for him to visit with severely wounded troops who were patients at nearby Walter Reed Army Medical Center and Bethesda Naval Hospital up in the D.C. area. I also escorted him down to Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas, where the severely injured burn patients were located at the time. It's interesting to note here how Trudeau had become somewhat a folk hero to our injured service members because of his comic strip series had lessened the politicization of the war from the troops' perspective and personalized the real issues on care and support for those who have served and sacrificed. In a discussion I had with Gary Trudeau while we were visiting with the troops at Walter Reed back then, he said, "America in general has not been asked to sacrifice much for this war. Their world has nothing to do with the military world. I think it's important, if you give a platform that I've been given, to try to bring those two worlds together and say, look, these guys are making some pretty heavy sacrifices and contributions in our name, and we should know a little bit more about them, unquote. Well, this got me to thinking about the two worlds that Trudeau had mentioned. I thought about my two worlds, one where I am proud to serve my country with a very successful military career, and the other, my valuable faith as a Unitarian Universalist, which has been the bedrock of my moral compass throughout my entire life. You know, it's not easy being a UU in the military, particularly when a number of situations and actions, such as being involved in an armed conflict, sometimes challenges your thoughts on whether you are capable to adhere to your faith and carry out the lawful order imposed upon you by the commander-in-chief. I, for one, am blessed that throughout my career that I did not serve in a war, although I was deployed to a peacekeeping mission in Haiti in 1994, as well as performed numerous search and seizure maritime law enforcement boardings at sea, where at times pressured situations required me to employ the use of my handgun. Within the two worlds of my faith and the military provided me with an emotional and compassionate understanding of cultural awareness and a sense of proprietary ownership as a native-born citizen of this country. I am often quick to remind many that our UU faith has been deeply rooted within the military since 1775, when General Washington sought the assistance of local ministers to provide pastoral care for his soldiers before and after battle. A large number of those ministers who volunteered were Unitarian ministers. In fact, when the U.S. Navy Chaplains Corps was created in November of 1778, the first chief of chaplains was the Reverend Benjamin Ball of the First Unitarian Church of Boston. Our faith's military connection is indeed historical and has been an important part of providing the spiritual comfort to those who have served since the founding of our country. My point here is my pride runs deep in knowing that my faith has played an integral part in the defense of our nation. I look at our seven principles and see a correlation with our country's five armed services' collective core values of duty, courage, honor, commitment, respect, integrity, and selfless service. My faith has given me the wisdom of knowing that I am able to apply the principles of my spiritual knowledge and knowing that I am walking the talk and doing what I believe in. And this brings me back to my story about the Doonesbury character, BD. Trudeau's account of BD's recovery was very accurate, according to many of the service members I had talked with, and knew firsthand about what the experiences were like. I recall a discussion Trudeau and I had with a young Army specialist, left leg amputee, recovering at Walter Reed. He told us how the comic strip used real-life events, wounded troops and their families' face, and identifying the issues that have to deal with that they have to deal with. Trudeau said that there was not much hyperbole in this sort of thing. This pretty much closely tracks what soldiers would actually go through. It's important that our citizens understand some of the sacrifices that returning warriors are going through, as Trudeau explained to me. Beyond the story of the severely injured troops lie the story of the families and how they are forced to cope with the life-altering experience of dealing with their loved one who has returned from war. Traumatic stress hurts military families as well. One of, if not the most painful part of my job at that time, was listening to the stories from the family members discussing how they're coping or the difficulty of coping with their returning service member. The impact of PTSD on a family is equally tremendous and causes as much mental concern as the service member. I heard the real stories from service members through their wives, husbands, daughters, sons, mothers, and fathers and friends. The warrior's true cry for help comes from the family themselves. I consider these individuals as the forgotten victims of a war. One of the severely injured service member's spouse candidly told me when I asked about how things were going with her husband's vocational rehabilitation program, that she told me of a frightening story that I'd like to share with you. She told me that her husband lost three of his friends during his deployment in Iraq. Every day, he went out into the yard and talked to them. She watched him from the window and just saw how sad it was. He said he couldn't tell her anything about it because she wasn't there. She went on to tell me with teary eyes that she felt she had lost him. He thinks he's fine, struggles very hard to focus on his training program, but in the end, he comes home, drinks, and talks to dead guys because he can't talk to her. Another discussion I had was with the mother of a young Marine who was badly burned from an explosion of an improvised explosive device, or commonly known as IEDs, when the vehicle he was riding in ran over the IED. His face was badly disfigured, and although he was continuing with series of facial reconstruction, he remained depressed and unmotivated. All he ever wanted to be was a Marine, but that option was no longer available to him. I personally worked with him to get some new vocational skills to focus on, but he remained disinterested. He told his mother and me numerous times that he should have been left in that vehicle to die and not to be faced with what he's dealing with at that time. These stories went on and on. I had to find a way to try to rally these service members out of their depression by showing them the positive hope visually, not just in words. We often hear and we see the phrase, support our troops, plastered on bumper stickers, magnetic sign ribbons on cars, and a host of other things. The phrase has to be more of a realistic, actionable response than just a patronizing statement. What can we do? Of the nearly million veterans who have left active duty since 2002, some 40% have sought VA health care. Of that number, 44% were active duty and 33% were reserve or National Guard. The three most common health problems reported by these vets are musculoskeletal ailments, namely joints and back disorders, psychological disorders, and a catch-all category called symptoms, signs, and ill-defined conditions. As a citizen and taxpayers, we can start by ensuring that much-needed assistance for service members become and remain a top priority. The price of war has its variable costs, mostly known in the form of what I call combat toys or weapons, but seldom does it the importance on the transitioning assistance of service members is given an equal, if not greater, opportunity. Our elected officials need to hear from its voters that reduced veteran care is detrimentally impacting our community. It's not just the military veteran, but the family member, and even friends are affected. The young veteran today, particularly those between the ages of 22 and 30, are facing more difficult challenges than ever before. While the Department of Labor statistics released for the month of October shows a 7.9% figure of that unemployment, more than 15% of those unemployed are military veterans who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is an alarming statistic, which has little explanation as to why. While military recruiting ads show potential applicants about the wide range of training and educational opportunities, not to mention the proven talents of leadership, responsibility, and attention to detail, younger veterans capture the largest number of unemployed workers in America. There are a number of wonderful nonprofit organizations that are involved in helping today's service members in a variety of ways, through employment assistance, as well as mental health care and supporting their families. I have particularly been involved with an organization called Homeward Deploy, which was founded by a fellow UU who by profession is an educator and professionally trained coach. Her name is Gretchen Martins. Gretchen, who never served in the military, also was exposed to seeing many of the challenges that our veterans are facing through her work as a coach and led her to create the Homeward Deployed organization as a way to provide support for transitioning service members and their families with professional coaching and helping communities to mobilize support their veterans. Over the past year, I've watched Gretchen and her colleague, retired Navy veteran Lisa Carey, work tirelessly without pay, I might add, as volunteers recruiting professional coaches who are willing to offer their own time without a fee to work with veterans and their families on employment opportunities as well as personal matters. It's a great organization which ensures full support for all service members and their families, and that includes the LGBT community as well. I encourage you to look in Homeward Bound, Homeward Deployed, if you're interested in wanting to know more about them. Their website is easy to remember, and I think you see it up there. It's www.homewarddeployed.org. If you want any more information, I'll be happy to talk to you about it after the service. Remember, our country, as with any enterprising commerce nation, requires a military. The fact that we have an all-volunteer force speaks volumes in terms of those who serve do so for a number of reasons, but most importantly recognizes the high risks that they may face by the nature of their vocation. They go because they're told to go and live up to a contractual commitment to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. Decisions are made beyond them. It's okay to be angry about the war, but recognize they are the ones that carry out the orders and that are placed before them. Support for troops does not have to imply a statement of our agreement or disagreement on the subject of war altogether. To quote a phrase from a close friend of mine, Army National Guardsman Zach Bazzi, who is proud of his heritage as a Muslim American and his desire to be a soldier, Zach told me, "I love being a soldier. The only bad thing about the Army is you can't pick your war." We as UU share a faith whose goal of world community and peace, liberty, and justice for all resonates humanist and spiritual teachings that call on us to respond to our beliefs by loving our neighbors as we do ourselves. It is with words and deeds that make up the interest and compassion to support one another and to reach out to others. Members of this church, ladies and gentlemen, we hear our warriors cry. Let us reach out to them and become whole again. It's good for our country as citizens, but more importantly, it's good for our hearts as humanitarians. Thank you so much for listening to me. Blessed be. Amen.